Turk, who's the chair, and welcome back to our B'nai Yeshur family, Rav Shmuel Lesher. Rav Lesher grew up in Passaic. He spent a number of summers in our kollel here at the B'nai Yeshur in Teaneck. Now he's a Knight Seder Rav Sholem Meshiv at Yeshiva University. He's been a rabbinic intern at Avastah. He's part of Baron Kollel Elyon at Yeshiva University. It's a great pleasure for me to welcome Rav Lesher back to our community, even in a virtual sense. Tonight, the topic is bridging the gap to Matan Torah. And I introduce Rav Shmuel Lesher. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Rav Przanski and Rabbi Turk, for setting this up. As you mentioned, I spent two summers in the Kollel in B'nai Yeshur, and I got to see firsthand the beautiful community that you have there. So, as you said, it's virtual, but it's very special to be together with you tonight. So tonight, our topic for this evening's shiur is bridging the gap to Matan Torah. And I have a source sheet. I will just share my screen with you right now, and you'll get to see it. There we go. How does that work for everyone?
Great.
Looks good? Okay. So this is the bridging the gap to Matan Torah. And as you know, I there's one thing that we've been hearing over the past couple of months, the theme that I would say has everyone talking about is, you know, the things that we're lacking, the gaps, the imperfect world that we're living in right now, the challenges that we have, what we wish we could be doing, making up for problems, right? Tevilas kalim, trying to immerse our vessels in when there's no mikvah, or to have, how do we make up all the kriyas haTorahs, all the, you know, the public reading of the Torahs? How do we make up for these gaps that we have in our lives? I would like to spend the next few minutes focusing on the gaps, but maybe in a different angle. How many of you have heard of the gap theory? Gap theory. I never heard of it until very recently. But I would like to share with you this idea. I think it's fascinating. I think it will give us an insight into these days and how we can prepare better for Matan Torah. So in 1994, George Lowenstein, a behavioral economist at Carnegie Mellon, he provided a comprehensive analysis of situational interest. And he came up with this theory that is now known as the gap theory. And he wanted to know what makes people interested, what makes people buy in to a particular idea. Like if someone's giving a shiur or someone's giving a speech, or, you know, what makes people drawn in, right? What's going to make the audience, you know, so to speak, get interested? And he came up with a very simple answer. It's surprising that it's so simple, but he came up with this study that really curiosity, if it's piqued, it's almost like an itch that needs to be scratched. People want to know, you know, what the answer is. And if you can pique people's interest, if you can get people to be curious and sense the gap between, he talks about this gap theory, the gap between, on the one hand, you have this knowledge that you have, and then you sense that there's this gap between what you know and what you would like to know. And that experience, you want to get to that other side. You want to know what you don't know. And that experience of feeling that gap is what gets people to be drawn in, to buy in, to give situational interest. You can see here, they've kind of mapped out some of this study with a little chart. And you can see on the chart B that that a pattern suggests that people who know a certain amount of an area of a certain topic, a subject, if they're curious to know more, they're actually their interest is increased. Now, what does this have to do with this time that we're in right now, and what does this have to do with preparing for Matan Torah? So we're now in the period between Pesach and Shavuos. Pesach, we left Mitzrayim, and many point out that Pesach is really, it's followed by Shavuos, but it's only followed, and it's actually a culmination. Shavuos is sort of the pinnacle. The Jews leave Egypt, and then they receive the Torah at Har Sinai at Shavuos. And we count the Omer, we connect those 49 days, we connect this period as one long unit with the beginning of Pesach and the end of Shavuos. So although Pesach is long gone, in the spirit of Pesach, I want to ask four questions. In the spirit of the Seder night, four questions. And I would want to suggest an approach which addresses all of them and perhaps connect it to our particular scenario and the gap theory. So, if we were to categorize Pesach in one word, let's say the religious experience of Pesach, what would that one word be? Anyone want to make a suggestion? Don't be shy. You can raise your hand, Uncle Mitchell. What do you say, Uncle Mitchell? Me'avdut lecheirut. Okay, good. So from slavery till freedom. Okay, wonderful. That's great. Anyone else want to give any suggestions? Aunt Lindsay? Hi, Sabaraba. And then I see someone with a lot of hair, so I'm assuming that's Noam. I can't tell. Yeah, there's Noam. So I would humbly suggest something. I definitely think Me'avdut lecheirut is for sure from slavery to freedom. But something that's striking to me personally is the emphasis on questions. The emphasis on as the Torah delineates, right? The pasuk says in the source number 2, "Vahayki yishalcha bincha," when your son, when your child will ask. That's when we start the whole process of the Seder with children. It's all about children asking. Right? We start with the manishtana, which is often the youngest child says it. That's how we begin the entire process of Magid, the questions, the four questions. The four sons ask questions. If you don't, the son doesn't know, right? Apisachlo, you have to encourage him to ask questions. The word I would use to describe it is the focus on question. It's a focus on question. Yes, me'abdus l'cheiris, but we express a lot of that experience through both the question and the answer. We don't do what you would expect, right? You'd expect, and this is the opposite. When we come to Shavuos, the culmination of this experience, we have the giving of the Torah. And we have the Torah, which generally we learn Torah how we have things that you learn. And here are the things we believe in, and we teach it. You know, that's how we teach Torah, that's how we teach anything. We have a topic and we want to, relay a certain message, so we teach it. Why, when it comes to Pesach, it's very strange. We almost wait around until someone asks us a question, ki yishalcha bincha, when your son will ask. And that's completely the opposite of what we normally do, which is what we do on Shavuos. We learn Torah. We have things we want to teach. We have our tenets of our faith, and we teach them. So why on Pesach is there this emphasis that we only start the process when there's questions first? That's question number one. So we have this contrast between the beginning of this period, which is Pesach, focusing on questions, and then the end with Shavuos, Matan Torah, which I would say symbolically is just the receiving of the Torah. We get the information. There's no question involved. There's no Aseres Adibros, and then there's the Aseres She'elos, right? There's no 10 questions. It's just, you get the Torah, this is it, you know? So that's question number one. And question number two I alluded to a little bit before, which is, that the Torah itself and much of the Haggadah is focused on children, right? I remember growing up, I learned, my father said or someone said that, we wash for karpas, even though we generally don't wash for vegetables, right? Before we eat them, before we dip them in the liquid. So the children should ask. So the kids should ask. So I remember one year I got up the Seder, I said, okay, Abba, I'm asking, why do we dip in the why do we wash before we dip? So the kid should ask. Okay, well, I'm asking. So I still have to look into that one. But the Mishnah Berurah has a whole discussion about that. Okay, but a lot of it focuses on the children. getting them involved, the four sons. Why this emphasis on children, right? We all experience it. We're all part of the Jewish people. Why is this there such a focus on children? That's question number two. Okay, question number three. There's a strange thing. If you look to the Haggadah, we said that, you know, Pesach is the culmination of Pesach. Leaving Mitzrayim is really symbolically the end of the period, which is Shavuos, right? The Matan Torah. So if you look at the Haggadah, the mention, when we mention Matan Torah, we mention the experience of, arguably, the culmination of the experience of Pesach, we have a very strange thing. In Dayenu, source number three, we say, Ilu karvenu lefnei har Sinai, v'lo nasan lanu es haTorah, Dayenu. Right? If God had brought us close to the Mount Sinai, had not given us the Torah, it would have been enough for us, and we would have been able to say thank you. That's a very strange thing to say. It would have been enough if we had been brought close. What is bringing close to a mountain? Again, the narrative is that we get to this mountain and we get the Torah. Okay, if we just got to this mountain, what does that do for us? You know, it's just a place which happens to be where we get the Torah. What is the significance of being close to that? We would have thanked God. Thank you so much for bringing us to, right, every part in Dayenu. There's like one level of salvation. Then if it would have been just that, it would have been enough. If we didn't even get into the land of Israel, we just got the Torah, that would have been enough. This seemingly is very, very strange. I mean, what's the value of just standing at a mountain? Okay, that's question number three. For our fourth question, I'm going to read our fourth source. So there's a puzzling Gemara, another Gemara about this another passage from Chazal, from our sages, that talk about this standing at the mountain. And I wanted to show this to you because it's very, very strange. The Gemara says, emphasizes the standing, the Amida of at Har Sinai, at Sinai. And it says that that because we stood at Sinai, we were this zuama, this poison we were rid of this poison. The nachash, the snake, when he convinced, just to summarize the Gemara, the nachash, v'shash ba'a nachash al Chava, when the snake came upon Chava and the snake convinced Eve to eat from the apple, she was infected with this zuama. And then the Gemara goes on to say that that the Jews lost the zuama at Sinai. And even, it says, converts, it's so important that every member of the Jewish people was at Sinai, that even converts had to have some sort of, had to have their mazel, some sort of their angel there, even though they weren't there. So they really needed to have a connection to this physical standing at Har Sinai, because they lost this like strange poison. What exactly is this poison, and what does Har Sinai standing? Again, remember, the Gemara emphasizes, if you look, that they stood. The non-Jewish nations did not stand. The non-Jewish nations didn't get rid of, this Zuama didn't leave from them, because they didn't stand at Har Sinai. What exactly does that mean? So, that's our four questions. We have the focus of questions on Pesach, whereas Shavuos, we teach the Torah. Focus on children on Pesach. What's the children? Three, we said, we don't understand why Shavuos, it would have been enough, Matan Torah, would have been enough just to stand there. Why is that important? And four, we have this puzzling Gemara about Zuama. I'm just going to... Is there a way to mute some? Is there a way that someone can mute? Okay. Am I muted?
Mute everyone.
One second. Is someone not muted
Let me see what I can do.
Okay. Okay. So I'll continue. So those are the four questions. Okay. So now, I would like to continue. Yes?
Okay, you're good.
We're good?
I think so.
Okay.
So if everyone mutes themselves, it's easier, because this way they can ask questions when appropriate.
Okay, if anyone wants to ask questions, feel free. Feel free. Okay.
But otherwise, please mute.
Okay, otherwise, please mute. So I would like to begin unpacking these questions with an idea that I heard from Rav Aaron Lopiansky, my Rebbe. And with that, I think we can address how this time period could be best used. So we know that Har Sinai is the lowest mountain, right? We know that Har Sinai is representative of humility, right? We learn in Uncle Maishi, right? My daughter listens to Uncle Maishi a lot, and it's very important, right? That all these big mountains wanted the Torah to be given on them, and Hashem picked, you know, Har Sinai gives a small mountain. Small mountain. So it's good to be humble. That's kind of where it ends for most people, and that's what we learn when we're kids, and I think it's time to kind of reevaluate. Is that really what it's about? What about Har Sinai? Okay, it's a small mountain. Humility is good. Is there something that we want to... Is something deeper about that? So Rabbi Lopiansky shared the following idea. Everything in the world... This is an idea found in many areas in Machshava, in Jewish thought. Everything in the world requires a place. It requires a makom. It needs a shelf to, so to speak, put it on, right? Even the Torah. The Torah needs a place to enter into this world. The existence of this world is such that we always need some sort of place for everything. To give an example, if someone is a chazan, a wonderful, beautiful voice, and he applies to a shul, he says, "I'm a great chazan. I can be your Yom Noraim chazan." Wonderful, great, amazing. If he applies to an accounting firm with his credentials, there's no place for him. It's not relevant. His skill set is not relevant in that context. And so the what Chazal are telling us is that the place of Har Sinai, the place where the Torah was revealed to the world forever, had to be. It wasn't just a nice thing. It had to be. There was no other way for it to come to this world other than coming into a place that was low, that was chaser. We know that water goes to the lowest place, Chazal tells us. That humility is essential. It's not just a nice thing. The Torah had to come about being revealed to the world in a place that was symbolic of the sense of humility, of lacking, of feeling that we are chaser, feeling that we don't have what we need without the Torah. We've all had the experience of cramming for a test, right? When you're in school, you need to do well on a test, so you cram all the information, and then you take the test, and the day, maybe the day later, probably even faster, 5 minutes later, you don't remember the material. Why is that? Because you didn't see that information as essential to your life. You didn't feel lacking without it. You didn't feel a desire to really know that information. It was pragmatic. You needed to know it, so you studied, you crammed. But the information itself wasn't essential to your life. It wasn't something you needed to know. It wasn't something that you felt a gap in your knowledge, a gap in who you were without it. If that's all that the Torah is, it's a nice thing. It's something which is inspirational. It's something which is, you know, it's nice to get, you know, when we think we want to hear something nice. That can't be the way that the Torah was given and revealed in this world. The Torah needed to be expressed in a situation of Sinai. Sinai represents this idea of a need, of a gap, of a feeling of we're chaser, we're lacking without the Torah, experiencing deficiency, experiencing a wanting. So if we go back to our questions, so our first question, why... I'll do the second and third, a little out of order. Why is the standing at Har Sinai meaningful? So now we understand. The standing at Har Sinai that we're thinking Hashem for in Dayenu is that we sensed a tremendous feeling. Every Jew understood at that time, every neshama, every soul of the Jewish people understood that this is, we don't have an existence without this. We can't live without the Torah. They sensed it in their soul. They sensed it in a deep and profound way that they could not live without the Torah. And they felt that gap, like Lowenstein was talking about. They felt that tremendous gap between where they were and where they wanted to be. And they wanted, it's an existential angst that they felt, that they wanted the Torah. And that, perhaps, is why the Zuama, this sort of speak, before I learned this idea, I didn't know what it meant. There's this contamination. What is it? So perhaps the Zuama, if we look back to the story of the Nachash told, the snake told Eve, told Chava, eat from the tree, the Eitz Hadas Tovara, eat from the tree of knowledge of good and bad. You don't need Hashem, you don't need God to tell you what's right and wrong. You don't need a moral authority. You are independent. You are not chaser without God. You can be your own God, right? Let you be a God. And the Nachash's argument was very profound, right? We're not just talking about, a small little... We're talking about the original sin. The snake was saying to man and to woman, you don't need God to be your moral authority. You can be significant. You can be independent. And that's what was infected within man. And that's what we, profoundly lost when we faced the reality of revelation. We faced the reality that we can't live in this world without God. We can't live a meaningful life without a set of morals, without a set of values. I mean, with this world that we live in today, there are so many things that the Judeo-Christian ethic, we don't even realize. There's so many values that we assume to be true of society that really are rooted in the Torah. The Torah influences so many things in this world, and we really sensed it in a very profound way, and we lost. And that argument of the Nachash was lost from us, and therefore we sensed the need of the Torah, the profound need that we have. And perhaps this is why Pesach, we focus on the question. What does the question do for us? A question gets us in touch with that inner child. That's why the focus of the Seder is on the child. It gets us in touch with the question, the curiosity. Right? I know my daughter, I was putting on my tie, for the shiur, and she's like, what are you doing, Abba? And I'm like, whatever, just see if it looks nice, And she's like, no, what are you doing? And I try to evade and, I didn't want her to know I was giving this year. And she just won't, she just needs to know. She needs to know what I'm doing, why I'm doing it. And sometimes my answers don't satisfy her. So a child has that deep need, that deep sense that if I don't understand this, if I don't know this, if there's a gap in my knowledge, I need to know. And that's what we begin the process of a Kabbalah Satorah with Pesach. Because Pesach is the sense that we continue throughout this time period, is getting in touch with our questions, with our inner child, with our curiosity. And often, unfortunately, adults, we kind of lose that. We have intellectual sophistication, and we lose some of that curiosity. Okay, I don't know that. I don't have the answer to that question that I have. Okay, no. Shine, right? I'll move on with my life. It's not gonna eat me up inside. I mean, part of that youthful energy and that fire that many times, teenagers and younger people, they have a passion, they have a fire, they need to know, they need to get, they need to get an answer. And what we're really, Chazal are telling us with this insight is that the makom, the very place that the Torah must be given, and it's true for us and as individuals as well, is in a place of yearning, in a place of questioning, in a place of I don't know, I don't feel that I have the answers, I don't feel complacent, I don't feel that I have the answers. Often in life, I think we shy away from a lot of our questions, we shy away from our struggles, we try to, especially Matan Torah, Shavuos, I mean, that's certainly not the time to be asking our questions and to be engaging with that. And I think the beautiful insight that we have here is that that's not the case. That's not the case. In fact, the opposite is true. On Pesach, we're trying to get in touch with our questions, to get in touch with where we feel that we have gaps, where we feel we want to grow. And paradoxically, right, the title of the shiur is a little bit misleading. Right, I said bridging the gap. So paradoxically, bridging the gap to Matan Torah is really experiencing that gap. It's finding that area where I feel I want to learn more. I feel I want to understand more. I have a problem. I have a burning question. That's an area that actually Chazal are telling us is a profound avenue for a Kabbalah Satorah. So it's utilizing that energy. So we saw from Lowenstein that the gap theory, it really builds curiosity, and it gets people to buy in and to be drawn in with situational interest. But it actually goes a lot deeper. It goes a lot deeper. With a feeling of a gap, we can actually be motivated to do a lot more. We see this right now, actually. Right, the search for the coronavirus vaccine has brought a lot of, you know, the gap that we have between what we know now about the virus and what we want to know about the virus. It has brought a lot of countries together. It has brought universities working together. It's brought people working from, you know, around the clock. It motivates us when we sense this gap and this feeling of need. It motivates us to work harder, to reach a little bit farther, and to ask those questions that are difficult. In source number 5, there's a fascinating Gemara in Eruvin that Beisham and Beis Hillel, they asked some of the most difficult questions, some of the most challenging questions, and they asked maybe it wasn't easier for man to have ever been created, right? They asked that question. You know, that's a very challenging question. Ultimately, the Gemara concludes that maybe it wasn't easier, but now that man has been created, there's a purpose for him. You know, those questions really challenge us. And Chazal were not afraid to ask difficult questions because they saw that those are the questions that really get us in touch and put us in a place that we're ready to grow. In a fascinating piece, Dr. Irvin Yalom, who's like an existentialist therapist. I'm actually reading this, his book for my Furkauf class, Rabbi Turk knows about. So he writes a fascinating thing. He talks about Heidegger, who was a German existentialist philosopher, spoke of two modes of existence, the everyday mode and the ontological mode. This is source number 6. In the everyday mode, we are consumed with and distracted by material surroundings. We are filled with wonderment about how things are in the world. In the ontological mode, we are focused on being per se. We're filled with a wonderment that things are in the world. It's just this sense of, oh my goodness, right? The world exists. It's a sense of a real recognition that there is something profound about the existence of the world. But when we exist on the ontological mode, the realm beyond everyday concerns, we are in a state of particular readiness for personal change. And that's what Yalom talks about in therapy, that he tries to challenge his clients to face the meanings in their lives. And that's what Viktor Frankl, in his well-known book, Man's Search for Meaning, talks about facing death and facing experiences that call into question our very existence. And that's what he explains right here. And this is what I think is very relevant for our shiur. How do we shift from the everyday mode to the ontological mode? How do we make that shift? That we are not just worried about the here and now, we're also thinking about bigger pictures, like a Matan Torah, like a big, you know, big event. How do we make that shift where we're ready for personal change, where we feel we are lacking, where we want to grow? How do we make that shift? Many times we want that, deep down we want that, but how do we make that shift? So he speaks about boundary experiences. Boundary experiences are what rivets us. It's what jolts us out of our everydayness. Feeling a boundary, feeling a limit, feeling that we, facing death, facing a loved one passing away, feeling our own sense of my life is limited, is the ultimate boundary. It's the ultimate sense that my life has a limit and there must be something greater. There must be more to my experience. And that's what the idea that Chazal are telling us. They're telling us that Har Sinai is that sense, that existential awareness that I have limitations. That Klal Yisrael experienced at Har Sinai that we could not survive without the Torah. And that's what gets us in touch with understanding in a deeper way that our gaps, our sense of chisaron, our sense of feeling that we need to grow, is actually a process and an opportunity rather than a handicap. There's actually a maral, which is it's a little bit of a different point, but I think it's very, very much related. The maral is a fascinating thing. I'll summarize for you the idea, and for time's sake. So, the maral explains that Moshe Rabbeinu. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu had two levels of prophets. Moshe Rabbeinu is the greatest prophet. He's the greatest prophet. All other prophets could not come close to Moshe Rabbeinu. But Rashi says an interesting thing in source number 8. Rashi says that Moshe prophesied with both Zeh Hadavar and Ko Amar Hashem. With the language that the Torah refers to it as, this is as Hashem spoke, and approximately, Ko Amar Hashem, this is kind of what Hashem said. And the Maral says, I don't understand this Rashi. Rashi says that all other Nevi'im prophesied with Ko Amar Hashem, and Moshe had that, but he also had this added level. Mosef Aleim Moshe Shinisnabe Beloshin Zehu Hadavar. Moshe had this additional level that he had. This is exactly what Hashem said. That when Moshe came down Har Sinai, this is exactly word for word, and only Moshe had that level of prophecy. Many refer to it as the Aspaklari HaMeira, this level of prophecy that was not, you know, able to be challenged by any other prophets. So the Maral asks the question, what is this, you know, why are you saying that Moshe had this lower level and he also had this higher level? Just tell me that he had the highest level. And obviously you know that he had the lower level. So he explains a very fascinating idea, which is, I think, related to this experience that we're talking about. So he explains in source number 10 that there's really two paradigms of prophecy, and Moshe had both. There's the paradigm which is the Nevuas Moshe, Torah's Moshe, exactly what Hashem said. Zeh Hadavar, it must be like a math formula. There can't be anything that's off. There can't be anything that's slightly off in the equation, or else things happen, you know, things get thrown off. That's unique to Moshe Rabbeinu. But there's also another element of prophecy that he had. Even Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest prophet to ever live, understood that there was a personal experience that he had with Hashem that was unique to his experience, that was unique to the events in his life. And that must come about, what the Maral says, it must come about through a Ko Amar Hashem. It has to come about through somewhat of a vague nature, because everyone's experience is different. Everyone's life is different. Everyone, the events of the world change. And therefore, the prophecy of Moshe in the Ko Amar Hashem realm was his unique relationship with Hashem. And that's what other Nevi'im also had. There's two different types of prophecies. How does that relate to what we're talking about with the question and the gap? Because I think in general, in life, when we go through, you know, different religious experiences, we go through something which is new and exciting, we sense that childlike curiosity, we sense that excitement. And then once we kind of get there, and we, you know, it becomes the norm, and we're able to assimilate the knowledge, we kind of forget that experience, that excitement, that newness. But what Chazal are telling us is that there's always another level. Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest prophet, he had this tremendous level of clarity, of prophecy. Even he, in his relationship with Hashem, with his unique understanding, his unique and personal relationship, he knew there was there were always new vistas, new areas to grow. And often we get stuck and we feel like if we have a special experience, special religious experience, or a question that we have that we get answered, we feel, you know, once we get, that becomes our norm, or once, you know, we're not there anymore, like, you know, you come away from a Ne'ilah, Yom Kippur, once we're not there yet, that wasn't really me. Like, how do I get back to that? And that's what Yalom was talking about, and that's what I think Har Sinai represents for us. This time period is a time to work, to think about, and to question, what are areas where maybe I don't have the full picture, that I feel that there's a gap, that I feel there's something new that I want to invest in. And that's what Moshe Rabbeinu had. He didn't just leave it at the Torah, the way the Torah was, and that's important, that's obviously significant, and Moshe Rabbeinu's Nevuah can never be replicated. But he also had this element of the newness, of the childlike curiosity, of the personal relationship with Hashem. And I think during this time, I mean, we can ask ourselves questions of, you know, difficulties, that things that we started off saying, we're living in a time where we feel very limited. We can't go to shul. We feel we can't do all the things that we'd like to do. We can't see certain people in person. It's challenging. So we feel that gap. We feel that sense of longing. And I think that that's just profoundly feeling that frustration, feeling like we want more. That's, in its own right, that's the experience of Matan Torah. That's the experience of the preparation for Kabbalah Satorah. That sense that we really want more. We want to grow. There's a gap between where we are right now and where we'd like to be. That is, if I were to summarize, that is the gap that we experience in Matan Torah. That's what Chazal are emphasizing. So there's a fascinating discussion. Many people talk about, right, Das Torah and what Gedolim have Das Torah, and they know certain things beyond maybe what they've seen, or maybe they can extrapolate based on their closeness to Hashem and what they understand from the Torah. So my father-in-law showed me a beautiful quote from Rav Lichtenstein. It has nothing to do with Das Torah, but it does, in fact. It doesn't have to do with that debate. But he has a beautiful line. I wanted to share it with you. He says, this is in his one of his articles in Leaves of Faith, Volume 1, where he discusses Torah Umada and the balance and how we should approach it from a Torah perspective. He writes a very beautiful line. He says, of Yediyas HaTorah, the knowledge of Torah, Chazal have relatively little to say. But of Talmud Torah, they can never say enough. They can never say enough. That is just a beautiful line. I think it encapsulates this idea that it's about being Osek BaTorah. It's about this sense that we don't have the full picture. We don't have the idea necessarily. But that's what Talmud Torah is about. The engaging and the vibrant experience of questions, of difficulties. You know, if you open up a Gemara, there's all these questions, there's these debates, there's things that are not clear, right? We saw Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, they raised those difficult questions. Why? Why are we challenging? Why are we focusing so much on the question and the process and this sense of yearning and lacking? Because that's really what the process of Talmud Torah is about. It's about the engagement with Torah in a real way. An engagement with asking questions, and when you get answers to your question, there's going to be another question. And that's what we're talking about with Moshe Rabbeinu. That even in Moshe, even the highest, the prophet with the greatest level of prophecy, even he had this Kol Amar Hashem, this vague element that the Maharal told us was the newness, the next level. Moshe Rabbeinu had another level that he didn't reach. And sometimes we touch that level at times of inspiration, and we feel, wait, that's not who I am. Or maybe that was inspiring, how do I get there? We get there by getting a sense, by getting a window into that next level up, by understanding that there's a little bit more. There's a little bit more to our experience. And right now, we can definitely sense our feelings of chisronos, our feelings of gaps, a feeling that we really want more. And being okay with being complacent is not, if that is the case, that can't be our Amida b'fnei Har Sinai. That's not what it means to stand at Sinai. Yes, we giving ourselves a pat on the back. I'm not saying that you should feel terrible about yourself, and you should feel like you're a broken person. I'm not saying that. What I am saying is that sometimes we shy away from our deficiencies, our mistakes, our challenges, things that we don't have clear. And I think that what we're suggesting here, and this is a suggestion, is that ask yourself, what if we asked ourselves, you know, what are the gaps that I feel in my life? And picking something that I feel, this is an area where I want to work on. This is something which I feel, you know, everyone's thinking about when coronavirus is over. You know, when this is all over, what am I going to do? What am I going to, you know, this sense of gap, this sense of feeling of chaser, I'm lacking, I want to do more. Well, what am I going to do? And maybe if we thought about that, if we thought about what do I want to do, what do I wish I could do, it will clarify for us our own personal values. It will clarify for us what we want our personal Kabbalah Satorah to be, how we want our Shavuos to be. And with this awareness of our true sense of chisronos, of feeling chaser, feeling a gap, feeling limited, Be'ez Hashem, we will have a true Kabbalah Satorah and the right type of gap, which is the place for our commitment for Torah to land on. Thank you so much for spending this time with me. Thank you, Rabbi Turk and Rabbi Przanski, and all the family members that joined us. And hey, Willie. I wish everyone a good Yom
Kippur. Rabbi Lisha, I'd like to ask you a question.
Oh, sure.
I'd like to ask you a question.
Yes.
We all experience no Jews that are very much on that ontological level. They want to know, they don't want there to be any corner of Torah that they don't know. There's a Masechta they don't know. If there's a Daf they don't know, if there's something in Shulchan Aruch, they all want to know. but there are so many Jews, unfortunately, who don't have that curiosity. What would you say is the best way to inspire those Jews?
So I think, thank you for the question. I think that's part of the process. There's always areas of, you know, it's not just intellectual curiosity, right? I think everyone has a certain area. Again, I'm no way an expert, but I think that if you talk to people and you meet them where they're at, and, you know, many people have areas of their lives that they want to know, you know, how can I better work on this area of my life? How can I, you know, I have values which I very much relate to, but I have trouble, let's say, actualizing them. Or, you know, I think everyone has personal questions and personal struggles and areas where I think they sense that they, you know, getting people, that's what Yalom was talking about, that's what he does in therapy. You know, he's not a religious person, but he tries to get people in touch with those experiences of boundary experiences, facing questions about meaning of life, of death, and through those experiences, you kind of have to clarify, you know, hi Yaakov, you have to clarify for yourself, you know, what am I here for? So that question of what am I here for, at some point in someone's life, I think someone has to ask that question. If they're not asking that question, I think we can, you know, maybe create sort of again, not to pressure anyone into areas where they don't want to go, but if they're looking for that, to get them in touch with that. You know, people who feel complacent, who feel that I'm good and life is great, are going to have a hard time, with personal change. And that's part of what therapy is about. It's part of what personal change is about. It's about feeling I want to be better. You know, people, you know, so I don't know if I fully answered your question. And there's obviously different ways of doing it, but I think what I'm suggesting is one way of getting people, of helping people to access those, you know, that feeling, I think is talking about those questions of life, of, you know, what do you want to live for? What do you want your legacy to be? You know, these are questions people, you know, 50 years from now, who's going to remember that I ever lived? 100 years from now, who's going to care? Like, these are questions that any thinking person wants to feel like they have answers to, right? And I think, you know, I mean, my wife's grandfather's here. I have to say, someone who I think has a tremendous legacy, who's made, you know, a huge impact on the Jewish world, is you know, Mr. Edward Balk, right here. He's, you're 91, Saba Rabba? 91 years old, right? Or 90.
Right.
And, you know, so I guess you could tell us much more than I could say about what makes, you know, what helps people get in touch, you know, with getting better and becoming a better person. I'm sure you could.
No, I think you did a fine job. I could have started to that. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you. So I don't mean to put you on the spot, but Saba Rabba is someone who I think many look to as an inspiration for someone who has made his life, you know, and the lives of others better. And I think looking to those people and looking at, you know, How did XYZ person become successful? How did they touch so many people? How did they, you know, I think you don't even have to ask the healthcare workers, you know, who are working round the clock, if they see meaning in their work. I think it's hard, but they see meaning. They see like they're really making a difference in everyone's life. You know, it's, you know, Rahman al-Itzlan, people are really needing. So I think there's a lot of, I don't mean to go over, but there's a lot there, and I think you just have to help people getting in touch with what they really want. What do they really want deep inside? That's Matan Torah.
Thank you very much, Yishkar.
Thank you, everyone. Thank you especially to all the family that came out. And
I didn't have to leave my house. I didn't have to go anywhere.
Oh, it's a coming out, right, exactly. To tuning in, you know.
Thank you, Rabbi Lesher.
Thank you.
Kol tov, everyone. Good night.
Be well.
Good yontif. Okay.